Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and welcome to 83weeks.com. We're doing live Fallout coverage, a little bit of a post-game show with your hostess, with the mostest. Hostess? I don't know about that. Eric Bischoff. Eric, what'd you think of Queen and King of the Ring?
I really, really enjoyed it. There's so many things I liked about it. You know, before we even get into any of the matches, one of the things I liked about it is it didn't drag on for 4.5 hours.
Totally, you know, agree.
I was into it. I mean, I had to get up and use the restroom once or twice. I had to get up and get a cup of coffee once, and it was like I found myself jogging back because I didn't want to miss anything. How often do you watch a pay-per-view where you feel like you're afraid to get up and go get a glass of water because you're going to miss something cool, you know? And that's the way I felt through this whole thing.
What's amazing is you and I actually, we were sort of talking earlier this week, and we felt like, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not as excited about this PLE as I had been. It felt like we were entering a lull, like it was a down period. I just wasn't really pumped about the PLE this weekend. Man, it exceeded my expectations by a great deal. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think one of the keys was it wasn't a marathon pay-per-view. Like, you know, here it is where I'm at in Florida, and it's not even 3 o'clock and we're finished. So it was a nice little break in the middle of the day, and it didn't drag on forever and ever. I mean, I was really happy with the show and the quality of the matches. And I know we're going to go through it top to bottom, but I thought they exceeded expectations today. Eric, would you agree with that?
They exceeded mine by a mile. And I'm going to be, you know, I don't mean to always qualify and make disclaimers by saying I'm really going to try to tell you the truth, because I want people to realize I'm not just here hyping shit up. If I don't like something, I'm going to say I don't like it. If I'm bored, I'm going to say I'm bored. I'll critique anything. And when I say critique, I mean, I'll point out the things that really turned me on or turned me off or left me ambivalent in some cases. But there was not one moment within this pay-per-view that I wasn't really glad that I was sitting there watching it, not only watching it, but with watching it with our cousins over at Ad-Free Show's family, doing a watch along from the beginning to the very end. I dumped into this, you know, right after the 1-2-3, the Cody Logan match, and watched every second of it with our other family over at Ad-Free. And I was grateful to be there. It was really fun. I mean, it's a great way to spend an afternoon.
I enjoyed watching the pay-per-view from France, the WrestleMania Backlash. I watched it with some of the folks over at adfreeshows.com and thought that was a super fun way to watch the show with a bunch of your wrestling friends. I wasn't able to do it today, but I'm hoping that I get to do it for the next one. Let's talk about some of the card and what our expectations were going in. I have to admit, I wasn't super pumped about the tag match for the ladies, but I thought that finish, I don't remember seeing that before. What a spectacular finish that was with Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. What'd you think of that, man?
I loved it. I was particularly interested in watching this one because I have not seen much of Jade Cargill since she got the WWE. A little bit, you know, I mean, I've tuned in, but I haven't been watching her, you know, closely. And I've been very curious from the minute she left AEW to come over to WWE. I knew, having a little bit of experience in WWE and listening to guys like Chris Jericho talk about the transition, you know, that Chris had to make from WCW, thinking that he was ready for prime time and was ready for a main event in WWE, only to get there and learn that not quite as ready as I thought I was to play at a different level in a different environment. Not so much that it's a higher level, but the expectations were much, much different in WWE for Chris Jericho when he got there than they were in WCW. And knowing that, I was really curious to see how Jade, because she was green in AEW. I mean, she cut her teeth. I was there. I watched her in one of her first appearances. Cody Rhodes was involved with Shaquille O'Neal. I happened to be there and make an appearance that night. And I was up on stage watching her very first appearance. And I think that was her first appearance in AEW. And obviously very impressive young lady then physically, but you could tell she was so green and still is really in terms of her experience and time in the ring. And I say this with all due respect and anticipation for her potential, but she's not there yet.
Right.
She's getting there. She's getting there. And the finish I thought was damn near flawless from my perspective as a viewer and a fan, not as a analyst or somebody that has a lot of experience in the ring, because I don't have any really. Actually almost zero, but just aesthetically and everything else, I thought the finish was great. I thought the body of her match, there's still, how do I say it? It's awkward. She's still working through some things. And her match, a lot of the things that happen in her transitions and in even some of her offense, looks like she's thinking through it as opposed to it coming naturally, because she just hasn't had the reps yet. That comes with time. There's certain things, I think, in any, you know, for me, it was martial arts or even amateur wrestling as a kid. There's certain things you can learn in a training environment, and you can do pretty well in a training environment. But when the pressure is on, unless it's something that you've just got thousands and thousands of reps under your belt, it doesn't come naturally. It has to be thought through. And I think that's what I saw, if I was really analyzing her match and being honest and fair to her about it, is that she still hasn't had the reps yet to make her offense, in particular, look like it's instinctive as opposed to a thought process.
I totally agree. I thought it was an excellent showing for what it was. I think they've done a more than passable job at positioning Jade Cargill to be a star. You know, our old pal Paul Heyman used to be famous for saying, accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. I think they've done a pretty good job at that. We appreciate you guys checking in with us here at 83weeks.com. If you haven't already, be sure to hit the subscribe button and turn on the notifications bell. We're going live all the time these days, including late night tomorrow night. So, of course, today we're going to be recapping what happened with the Queen and King of the Ring and have a conversation about all things WWE. But tomorrow night, late, after several hours of AEW Double or Nothing, Eric and I will be live right here at 83weeks.com. So be sure to hit that subscribe button and turn on the notifications bell. Let's talk about some of the matches, man. The first one, I have to admit, I didn't expect a title switch here, but I was pleasantly surprised. I thought the outfits that the ladies were rocking, since, you know, that is what the culture is over there, I thought were excellent. I thought the presentation was great. The match certainly exceeded my expectations, and I just kind of didn't see it. But not only did we get a title switch, but we got a story with Dominic. And, of course, the internet immediately blew up into a custody of Dominic ladder match idea like we had years ago with Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. But maybe that's going to happen with Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. Hilarious stuff. And a lot of people are asking questions on social. What does this mean for Becky's contract? The rumor and innuendo is that her contract may be coming due. What'd you think of the match? What'd you think of the story? And what do you hope to see with Becky moving forward?
Well, I'll start with the last part first. I hope Becky moves forward and in a seamless fashion. And we just continue to see more of Becky, because I personally, as much as I think Liv did a great job in the match, there's nothing for me to suggest that I wish could be better or perhaps more improved. I think every aspect of that match was, I don't want to say flawless, but I guess as close as you could get. But Becky's still, she's still my jam. I just think so much of her, her character. It even for me, and I talked about this over at Ad-Free Shows, with the family. There's for me, okay, and this is not a criticism, it's just my feeling. There's something missing with Liv. I don't know what it is. She's obviously a gorgeous woman. She's in great shape. Her work in the ring is excellent. There's just something missing. And what I feel is missing in Liv exists in spades in Becky. There's just an inherent, natural, authentic charisma that isn't forced. It isn't a gimmick. It's just something in her. And perhaps to isolate what I'm talking about, if you go back and watch the open of the match when they both get into the ring, Liv is, and I get it, and I'm not being critical, guys. You got to learn to understand the difference between a critique and an observation and a criticism or a jab. But the way Liv is presenting her character, and she comes out, she looks like she's auditioning for the cover of Vogue, right? And it's cool. I get it. She thinks a lot of herself. She's a heel. She's in love with herself. She's like a female version, I guess, of Lex Luger back in the day, right? The narcissist. But it's not believable to me, because when you're in Saudi Arabia, you've traveled all the way around the world, you're in a match for the world heavyweight, or for the world title, women's world title, and right before you're in the ring with a competitor that's obviously there for a reason, you're posing like you're auditioning for the cover of Vogue. It takes me out of it. I understand that that's her character, but it takes me out of it a little bit. And I think that's the part that's missing, is Liv doesn't make me believe. Becky makes me believe. Contrast Becky to Liv in the very opening moments of that match were really important. It's the first impression of the night, right? It's your chance as a viewer and as somebody sitting in the audience to kind of feel what they're feeling. That's why you're there, by the way, to go on that journey with them. It's why you're interested in the first place. But when you look, you could contrast Liv's presentation to Becky's in the opening moment. I felt the tension that Becky was feeling because she allowed me to feel it. And to me, that's what separates those two characters, is the believability and the authenticity in the way they present themselves.
Well, I'm a big Liv Morgan fan. I have to admit, I wasn't always a huge fan, but I've come around. But I know that, you know, Becky has had twice as much ring time as Liv. So we're going to see that evolution and Liv continue to grow. And once upon a time, you know, something like what we saw today would be referred to as like passing the torch. And there's been some speculation about, hey, is Becky going to come back? Now, before everybody jumps on, oh, she's going to AEW. She is a mom. I could see her taking some time off and you know, say, you know what, let me get out of the race car for a little bit, take a break. I would imagine the doors are always open for her to come back, or maybe she is sticking around. We don't really know what's going on, but would it surprise you to see her take a break for a bit before coming back?
No, and I think you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago when the subject came up, is, and I brought it up, man, she's a new mom. You know, here's, as a parent, you know, that can still remember what it was like when my kids were very young. I remember, you know, I would go away for, I'd leave town, leave Lori and the kids, and be gone for 4 days on business. Go over to Japan for 5, 6, 7 days, whatever, come back. And you'd come back and it's like, wait a minute. You couldn't do that when I left. You couldn't walk like that when I left. You weren't saying those words when I've only been gone for 5 days. Now, granted, I know that they travel, you know, Becky and Seth get to travel with their child, so that makes it easier, but there's still a part of your life and a part of your child's childhood that you kind of don't want to miss. And even being on the road, you're going to miss some of that, even if you're together. So it wouldn't surprise me a bit. And I think you're absolutely 100% on the money, Conrad. I think the relationship is there and Becky's star status is firmly entrenched. So she can afford to step away for 3 or 4 or 5 months, because, or 6 months or a year, because guess what will happen while she's gone?
Anticipation can be a bigger star.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yep.
It works every single time.
Well, our polls work every single time too. And we threw one up here at 83weeks.com. We wanted to know your thoughts on Queen and King of the Ring. We got 51% giving it a thumbs up. And 31% thought it was mid, 17% thumbs down. I'm curious, like, I've seen some comments who were saying that the pay-per-view was mid and it wasn't that great and blah, blah, blah. These international pay-per-views, I have to admit, I didn't think we would see a title change. So just seeing the pay-per-view start with a title change made it of consequence. And a lot of these, respectfully, Saudi Arabian shows and international PLEs, if you missed them, hey, maybe you missed some great matches, but you didn't miss anything of consequence. But now we know that Nia Jax is going to get a title shot at SummerSlam. Now we know that Gunther is going to get a title shot at SummerSlam. Now we know that we've got a new women's champion. It felt like a lot of stuff happened, especially for a show that only had 11 performers on the main card. This was a show of consequence today, Eric. That feels like a difference from the way it used to be.
Well, and I can tell you, you know, now it's going back 5 years, but when I was there in 2019, I think I had to deal with either one or two Saudi shows. When I say deal with, I mean be a part of the creative team along with Vince McMahon himself of trying to figure this out. And it was the most painful experience I've ever been through professionally in terms of, you know, trying to accomplish something. There was no rhyme or reason to it. You know, on one hand, you're trying to satisfy the Saudis because they have their own ideas about what they want to see in, and by the way, they're writing a $50 billion check, so they get a vote. You know, maybe not 100% of the vote, but they get a vote. And what they wanted was sometimes in contrast to what WWE needed, because while, you know, you're booking on television for Saudi, but you're really booking for your domestic pay-per-views. And then, and we talked about this over at Every Shows in a watch along, and I remember there was a list. Here's all the talent that's willing to go over to Saudi. Here's all the talent that's not willing to go, because they had the option and they didn't get any heat if they didn't want to go. So now you've got the Saudis over here kind of casting their votes for what they wanted to see. You know, you've got to put some of what the Saudis want to see on television, but sometimes it was in contrast to the stories you were telling for your domestic pay-per-views. So it was kind of like trying to satisfy three different bosses who wanted three different things. And it was challenging. This one, to your point, Conrad, seemed so coherent and seemed like it was seamless in terms of creative programming and planning moving forward, as opposed to, okay, here's this one-off event, let's try to force it into what we're doing on television to try to make it work. And the other thing that I think perhaps explains why a percentage of the audience gave it a thumbs down is I'm sure there's a percentage of the audience out there who have gotten conditioned to wanting to see blood and this is awesome, you know, high-risk maneuvers. We didn't see a lot of that. What we saw was phenomenal wrestling from top to bottom. I don't think I saw more than a half a dozen moves or moments that looked like, I bet you they wish they could do that again. I mean, the action was tight. The selling, in some cases, better than others, but overall, the art of selling was very much on display. This was pure professional wrestling at its best, in my opinion. Now, if you're one of those fans who just love seeing, you know, suicidal type offense and guys jumping off the tops of cages and throwing themselves over balconies, I don't mean to pick on Mick Foley there, but those are the examples. You know, doing a lot of the high risk stuff that we see so often, like too often, in my opinion. If that's your jam, then yeah, you didn't get what you wanted. But if you really liked the art of professional wrestling and storytelling within it, I don't know that I've seen a better pay-per-view in a while.
I really enjoyed it. As we mentioned, there were only 11 performers on the show, the main card itself. Antoine Fair actually says, Liv doesn't emote well, and I thought Becky re-signed. Listen, we don't really know whether or not Becky has re-signed. I know that she's done media in the last week saying that she's in the final 2 months of her contract and she's yet to re-sign. I'm sure she's got an offer. She may have already signed and they're keeping it close to the vest. I think that's one of the fun things about wrestling is we don't have to know everything. One of the other things I wanted to mention is we ran a quick poll here at 83weeks.com. It was based on something you said. Is Eric right? Is Liv missing something? 68% of the folks watching this said yes, they think she is missing something. And 32% said no. Now, before all the Liv superfans come to her defense, I think we all agree that, hey, she's still growing as a performer. You take a look at where Becky Lynch was 9 years ago, and when she first won the title, she was not yet the man. All of that would come in time. I think first you've got to be given an opportunity to have the ball, stub your toe, figure out what works, figure out what doesn't, do more of what works, less of what doesn't. But I'm here for this Liv Morgan storyline, especially with the wrinkle of Dom. How do you think that is going to work out? If you had a guess, this whole Dom storyline, is that to tie in a Rhea return, or are they going a different direction?
It would make sense that it's to tie in a Rhea return, wouldn't it? I mean, it's logical. Yeah. So perhaps that's it, but we'll find out. We'll know. Here's what I think. Maybe it's what I hope. Let's put it that way. What I hope is going to happen is Dom brings a level of heat
Yes.
That's hard to find, to an equation that perhaps lacks heat, meaning Liv. She's a heel. She is portraying a heel character, but that something missing is an organic, authentic heel character. Almost get the feeling like she's still trying to be a heel as opposed to having become a heel. And I think with Dom, perhaps that missing element that I referred to is exactly the solution that will help her begin to feel the difference between an effort to be a heel and becoming a natural heel, if that makes sense.
Well, there's no doubt who's a heel. In our second match, we would see Sami Zayn pick up a win in a three-way dance. It was a triple threat for the Intercontinental Championship with Bronson Reed, who's quickly gotten into some good places after quite a run down at NXT. But Chad Gable, who's been hanging around the main roster for quite a while, I think he's finally found the gimmick and the presentation. Boy, they gave him some regrettable, silly stuff through the past several years. I love this version of Chad Gable. We got to advance a little bit of the Otis storyline without paying it off just yet. And it was a fantastic showing for Sami Zayn in Saudi Arabia. What'd you think of the triple threat for the Intercontinental Championship?
I typically don't like triple threats. I'm a personal issue guy, right? And a high stakes guy, you know, but I liked it. I liked it a lot. I'm just a massive fan of Sami Zayn. Again, talking about it with the family over at Every Shows. For me personally, I got to work with Sami a little bit back in 2019, and it's just an amazingly fun guy to work with because he's super creative. I mean, he's a very, very creative guy. When I mean creative, I'm talking about how to lay things out in the ring. And he has, I don't know if he learned it naturally, if he was born with the gift, or if he's worked at the gift, or a combination of the two. But he really understands psychology and how to get the most emotion out of a scene or out of a match or out of a backstage situation. I just think the world of him. So obviously I was a big fan of the match because of him, probably more so than I typically would be.
We've got Eric Bischoff live here. If you've got a question, we want to hear from you. I want to give a quick shout out to a couple of different folks, including Travis Rowland, who's supporting the cause. Greatly appreciate you hanging out today. Ice Teehee said Coherent, first Saudi show of the Paul Levesque era. You know, I don't guess I really put all that together, but this is the first Saudi show since Vince has been totally out and Triple H has his hands on the wheel. It did feel different from other Saudi shows. And I actually saw criticism online from people that I like and follow and know and trust. And they were sort of curious, you know, if the Saudis were going to be happy with this show. But as a wrestling fan, I was happy with this show. How much credit do you think Triple H deserves for A, doing a title switch, B, doing story that matters, and then having some real stakes? Not only did we get, you know, we said a show of consequence, but we had the king and the queen. The stakes are now made clear. It's not just you get a silly crown, but you're going to get a title shot at SummerSlam. There's a lot of tournaments in wrestling for many years that, okay, you get a cape. Wow, whoop-de-doo. Well, this is a title shot. I like that. And we got the breaking news announcement that Drew McIntyre is going to get his shot against Damian Priest for the world title. What do you think of Triple H's efforts here for the first Saudi show? Is it all Triple H? Is it just the new team? Is it Vince McMahon being out of the muck and mire? What would you hang your hat on?
All of the above. I think the fact that Vince McMahon is out of the middle of it, and again, I can only speak from my own experience, having been there and worked on a Saudi show with Vince McMahon and the team at that point, it was just, you know, you'd go in there on a Tuesday and Vince would lay out, okay, here's what I want to see. You'd go back in on Wednesday night for a meeting, you'd lay out what he asked for, and he'd go, I don't want to see any of that, I want to start over. It's like, it was random as hell. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful as it sounds. It just was what it was. Whereas now everything that we see suggests to me that there's a thought process, there's a plan, there's a story arc, which we're talking a lot about over at Wise Choices. There are beats within that arc that take the viewer on a journey. There are parameters, there are stakes. By parameters, I mean, for example, And we talked about this again over at Every Shows. I don't mean to hawk it, but it was really fun. I got about 12 of us on there talking about this stuff. And one of the things that came up was, you know, it used to be that the Intercontinental title meant that you were next in line. And a lot of that has disappeared over the years, right? Probably because of just the volume of television that's being produced and the need to have some kind of stakes on a week-to-week basis. And in the process of serving that volume master, you begin to dilute, in some cases lose completely, any of the structure that previously existed that made titles mean something, that made the King of the Ring mean something, that made, as the example we talked about, the Intercontinental title mean something. That's just disappeared, not completely, but for the most part. Those blueprints for how this industry, how this art form works, has been kind of blown up and become somewhat random. And again, I blame it or point to really just the sheer volume of television that's being produced compared to what was being produced 10 years ago when we saw more than that. And I think what Triple H is doing, I'm long-winded way of answering your question, I think what Paul Levesque and his team, it's not just Paul Levesque, trust me, it's Paul Levesque putting together the right team, getting everybody on the same page in terms of what the goals are, and then allowing people that are great at what they do what they do without constantly finding new ways to create chaos and turmoil within the process. I think it's a much more functional, creative machine as opposed to the intense, random efforts that we saw under Vince McMahon.
We got to give a shout out to AVO Frenzy, who's joined us here live. They had a great question about our next match, and boy, what a finish this was. Nia Jax is the Queen of the Ring, beating Lyra Valkyria. I butchered that last name. I got to get used to that. But my man AVO wants to know, hey, Eric and Conrad, what did you guys think of Nia flattening Lyra? What did you think of that, man? That was reminiscent of Yokozuna in a way, the old bonsai drop. But I was actually watching that, and Megan was in the kitchen and saw it and said, how do you work that? I don't know the answer to that. That looked brutal. What'd you think, Eric?
First of all, I want to comment on Lyra's gimmick, her outfit when she came to the ring. I thought it was badass. I stopped talking. I was in the middle of talking to everybody on screen here while I was watching on my television, right? Over at Every Shows. And I'm talking, you know, to Poundwater Dave or whoever I was talking to at the time. And I, out of the corner of my eye, I saw Lyra make her entrance with those big, you know, wings on her. And it's like I stopped in mid-syllable and went, what the hell is that? That is awesome. So I loved that. I thought that was very cool. As far as the match goes, oh, God, this is going to sound horrible, but I didn't really have very high expectations at all. So it wasn't that hard to exceed them, but boy, did they exceed them. I love the match. And as far as the finish goes, I don't know, but I will say this. If Nia has found a way to work that match without killing her opponents, she's going to be awesome. She's going to be awesome. And not only because of the way the match played out, the psychology, the pacing of the match, but did you see her in the ring when Paul Levesque gave her the crown?
I did.
That's real. That emotion was real. You can't teach it. You can't put it in a pill and swallow it. You can't put it in a needle and inject it. You can't order it off Amazon. For someone to have that much of a heart for what she's doing and to be that emotionally invested, you can make that person a star because it's there. That emotion is there. And the way she emoted it, I'm a Nia fan. I did not go into the matches one, but I did come out as one.
Eric, in real life, you would absolutely love hanging out with Nia. She is a fantastic person and an excellent performer. And I know that she got a bad rap on the internet wrestling community in her first run. But after that little hiatus, when she's come back, I think she's been on quite a tear. I think it's one of the better comeback stories in the history of wrestling, where without really reinventing itself, it just felt like she turned the volume all the way up. I, for one, am excited to see her challenge for the title. And a person that size with that devastating of a moveset, I mean, because half the stuff you see, it's like you can't poke holes in that. I mean, even my wife is like, hey, how do you work that? Because she's worried, hey, that girl's got broken ribs now. And as you said, if you can figure out a way to do that without actually breaking ribs and sending folks to the hospital, goodness gracious, what a finish. I'm on Team Nia. But I tell you, there's not a lot of folks who are on the board with three-way dances. We brought that up as a poll here. Do you like triple threat matches? Maybe once or twice a year, 43% said yes. 38% said nah. I agree with Easy E. So it's pretty crazy to see how polarizing a multi-man match was. Nothing polarizing about that Nia match, though. I thought it exceeded all expectations, as did Gunther and Randy Orton. So now we know who the Queen of the Ring is. It was time to decide the King of the Ring. Either one of these guys winning would have made a ton of sense. Randy Orton has a natural, hypothetically, if he was going to challenge Cody Rhodes, there is a natural built-in story there. You know that match is going to happen at some point. But Gunther's been on such a tear, the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. When he dropped it to Sammy, I think a lot of people assumed he's going to be in the title picture now. And that match, to me, was about as good as it gets. The storytelling, the match itself, the crowd was into it. But I saw a lot of comments online saying, hey, Randy's shoulder was up. He wasn't really pinned. And technically, that is true. Now, we've ignored that sometimes in other instances. And I know everybody immediately thinks about Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania a few years ago in the triple threat. But do you think that that becomes a follow-up story? Because we've got a little time between now and SummerSlam. So if they want to keep this Randy Orton Gunther thing going, the shoulder being up, they can keep that going, right, Eric?
I sure as hell hope so, and I would expect so. I would expect so. It's that's not a mistake that Randy Orton will make unless it's part of a story. So I just want to talk about the match, not the finish. That to me, my wrestling fandom was extinguished many, 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 many years ago when it became part of my business and my profession. It changed the way I viewed the product. I've said this before, and I'm not sure I've ever articulated very well, at least, what I meant by that or what I mean, because it's still an issue for me. But when I watch wrestling, whether it's WWE, AEW, TNA, anything else, I don't watch it like most people watch it. I watch it looking for indications of what they're trying to accomplish from a business perspective, where they're putting their emphasis on the presentation. Is it all action, AEW, or is it story, WWE, or is it somewhere in the middle, TNA? Currently, right? I watch for their advertisers. I probably pay more attention to who's advertising in a wrestling show on television than I do who's wrestling on a wrestling show. Because to me, from a business perspective, that tells me more about their current business model and how successful they are or aren't than whether a match is a Dave Meltzer five-star match or a three-star match, right? It's just different. I'm looking for different things than the average fan. And that's just because I've produced over 5,000 hours of wrestling in my life. I've learned or been forced to look at things differently than the average viewer. And Randy and Gunther brought the fan back to me. Like, I thought that guy died a long time ago. I never thought I would really sit down and watch a wrestling match and be so sucked into the match and the performance of it that I took my producer hat off and threw it over in the corner. This match made me throw my producer hat off, or I should say my glasses off, my producer glasses, because it's the way I look at things as a producer versus as a viewer. But I threw my glass with my producer glasses off, and I watched it through the eyes of a fan, a fan that I forgot existed, quite honestly. Randy, hats off, all kudos to Gunther, because it's a dance. It takes two to dance this dance. But Randy Orton, to me, is, I know Shawn Michaels gets this accolade a lot and deserves it. Every time he gets it, he deserves it. But I would be hard-pressed, if I had to take a lie detector test, I would be hard-pressed not to tell the truth. And I think Randy Orton is the best performer in the last 30 years. And in my opinion, subjective as it may be, not even close. Please, 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 if you're a young wrestler out there, even if you're an established wrestler out there, even if you work for WWE, and certainly if you work for AEW, my God, go back and watch that match about 100 times a day and just focus on Randy and focus on the way he sells. Randy Orton made Gunther, and he kept himself completely viable in the loss. He is an artist in a category that nobody else can come close to when it comes to selling. Nobody.
Michael Minton, who's joining us here live on YouTube, I actually wanted to ask you about that. Eric, what are your thoughts on how Orton sold throughout the match? Well, you said a young wrestler should watch the match 100 times a day. I think we got our answer. You were a fan of Orton selling.
Oh my God. I can't say enough good things about it. I will bore the people to death talking about Randy Orton's abilities. I mean, he sells from the top of his head to the balls of his feet. There's not a cell in his body that isn't selling, and not just selling. You know, I've said this before, and I know it sounds harsh and it sounds like I'm beating up on people, and I don't really care. But, you know, for the most part, outside of WWE, and I mean outside completely, especially younger talent, by younger, I mean anybody under 30 or 35 who hasn't been in WWE, they have two gears when it comes to selling, either no sell or sell dead. There's nothing in between, very little at best, occasionally. Randy has like 15 different gears. He's like a Peterbilt. You know, just when you think he's out of gears, he's got 15 more. It's just, he's so good at it, and it creates so much drama. You can almost feel the manipulation that's happening and see how Randy, and I called it out while I was watching the match over at Ad Free. I could smell the tension that he was building. I could smell the anticipation he was building in the audience, because the audience was like, come on, Randy, come on, Randy, come on, Randy. He gave them time to feel that emotion. And it took time. It doesn't happen just because, okay, I'm going to sell now. You ready to sell? Yeah, ready to sell. Okay, sell. Oh, ow, oh, oh, God. Oh, okay, now I'm going to reverse it. Here we go. That's not selling. That's just, I don't know what that is. It's not selling. Randy sold for such an extended period of time that you could almost feel the audience going, come on, Randy, come on, Randy. Well, guess what? That's what you want. Because when you finally give the audience and you make your comeback, or you have that hope spot where it looks like you're going to have a comeback, now the audience gets to feel that emotionally and express that emotion, which comes through the television into my living room here in Cody, Wyoming. And I got all fucking excited about it.
It was a fantastic match. What a performance. Ice Teehee joining us over on YouTube as well says, Randy Orton versus Gunther stole the show, brought the house down from the opening to the close. And he wants to know, Eric, in your opinion, was the botched pin on Randy an accident or the planned finish? Now, that is an interesting wrinkle, because I hadn't even considered that it might be the plan. I thought, hey, it happened. Everybody's kind of in a bad spot. It's live. It's not Hollywood. You can't do a do-over. So we could add a new wrinkle to the story if we needed to. But since everything else Randy Orton does is flawless, what if that was the intention?
That's the point I tried to make earlier on. Randy doesn't make mistakes like that.
Right.
That's not a Randy Orton mistake. I firmly believe it was part of a plan. It was part of the process. It's just more depth to a great story. It's more depth. I mean, it's just more for Gunther to get over on. All right. Did he really win? Did he not really win? I don't mean to fantasy book here, but if it turns out that there's a bitch and it was a part of the plan, now you've got a reason, a why, which, you know, is an important part of a story. You've got to have a why in order to have a match that matters. Now they got a why. So because Randy is so flawless and it would be such a rookie mistake, there's no way I'm going to accept that it was, well, it happened. Now we got to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. No, I think they planned a lobster dinner from the get-go.
Well, and that was the question I wanted to ask is, it felt like to me, like if you, after the match, we actually saw Gunther, who's been a heel pretty much the entire time. We saw the crowd chanting, "You deserve it." And I think it's interesting because I've thought about, hey, him versus Cody. Well, he's going to be the heel. Okay. I get that. But Randy Orton still gets cheered wildly to the point where they're singing his entrance music the whole way to the ring. You've got to have some sort of story, some sort of twist to make fans boo Randy Orton. Because I don't think what you want is a split audience where it's 50% nope. for Cody and 50% for Randy. You need Cody to be your Hulk Hogan, Mr. America, you know, white meat babyface. You need a heel. So perhaps this is a way to make the fans boo Randy. Do you think that's maybe the direction they're headed?
I hope so. I mean, I think Randy is, again, an accolades, there's not enough of them, but would I rather see Randy Orton as a babyface or as a heel? It's not even a conversation I'm willing to have. It's a heel. I want to see him as a heel. If somebody else wants to see him as a babyface, go have that conversation with somebody else because I can't have it. But if you want to talk about Randy Orton as a heel, I'm there all day long for you.
We want to hear your questions for Eric here. We got one or another comment from 2K Universe Elite who says the Randy psychology started in the entrance. I mean, Randy Orton always feels on. I mean, he's just fun to watch, and I think we've heaped a bunch of praise on him today. Jana wants to know, what do you think is next for Lyra? I think she'll be one of Liv's first opponents since they've been building that with backstage segments. What do you think? Do you think she'll be in the mix with Liv Morgan, or what would you do next with Lyra?
Honestly, I haven't been watching her long enough. I'm not aware of what they've been doing with her. I don't watch WWE on a regular basis, nor do I watch the AEW on a regular basis. I watch them both occasionally. I've been watching a lot of AEW lately. 2 weeks ago, I watched the entire episode, made notes, broke it down. Last week's show, I watched very closely. I'll be talking about again next week. Over at Wise Choices, because we're talking about story and story structure and kind of how to achieve some of the emotion that we saw today and perhaps how to achieve it in AEW. But I haven't been watching enough of Lyra to even comment on other than a fucking Duggar entrance. How's that? And the match was great. I don't want to dismiss that. She did a great job. She's not in that Becky Lynch category yet in terms of reps and experience, but she's more than solid, better than good, but not great yet, but she's working towards it.
With her being on the big stage and Nia just being a monster, they had the shortest match on the main card, 9 minutes and 40 seconds, plenty of time to tell a great story. We both loved that match, thought it exceeded our expectations. So I wouldn't change anything about that. The other matches did get a lot of time, though. Liv Morgan and Becky Lynch went over 16 minutes. Sami Zayn went more than 13 minutes before he picked up a win. Randy Orton and Gunther got over 21 minutes, nearly 22 minutes bell to bell. But the longest match on the show, as maybe it should be, was for the world title. It was Logan Paul challenging Cody Rhodes. And I think the clip that we'll all be talking about for a long time, yes, it was Logan Paul doing it. But boy, shout out to WWE production. We've never seen a shot quite like what we got of Logan Paul leaping off the top rope, putting Cody Rhodes through a table, a full 360, something that, you know, it was almost unimaginable in the more Kevin Dunn era. They've been trying new stuff with their production. I thought that was a beautiful shot, really innovative. I was a fan. What'd you think of that shot?
Absolute fan of the shot. Incredible match. I mean, what else is there to say about Logan?
Yeah.
You know, I just, I'm slack-jawed every time I watch him perform. Yes, because he's that damn good, but mostly because he's that damn good so fast and with so little mileage on him. It's weird. It's so amazing. It's weird. Cody loved to be in this match. Just white meat baby face. There was a sequence in the match, probably the last third of the match, the third act, act three, if you will, where Cody was in there with Logan and he's throwing those Dusty Rhodes left hand jabs. And pop, and he drops his pop, and he drops his hand, pop, and he drops his hand. Now, it was funny because I was just watching a Dusty clip from way back. I don't even know who he was. And I saw him do that exact same sequence. So it was just that little bit of a callback, little bit of a callback to Dad that just, it got me. It got me good.
I really enjoyed the match. Thought it exceeded all expectations. It was a real challenge, I'm sure, for Cody. I mean, here he has the whole company on his back, and we actually got a question about that. Phytography with Ann Evans says, two PLEs in, how is Cody's reign going in terms of carrying the company? He had a challenger at a PLE last month, Eric, and people said, oh, well, AJ is not a viable threat. This is of no consequence. And, you know, we know the outcome. And now here we get Logan Paul, kind of rushed. We only had a couple of weeks to tell the story, and he's not a traditional full-time wrestler. He has been a big match performer, and he's yet to have a bad showing, so I'm not doubting his skills, but it's two unique challenges for Cody. It's not like, you know, his first opponent is The Undertaker back in the day. This is a different era. They're trying different things. I think Cody has pulled it off fabulously with two great matches that exceeded expectations. But what did you think of Cody two PLEs in?
I mean, what else? I don't know how anybody could expect anything different. I think people have become, I mean, just the very phrase, Cody's carrying the company. I'm sorry, I don't agree with that at all. That's suggesting that, you know, you're minimizing Randy Orton and Gunther and Nia. You're in Becky Lynch. You know, you mean they're not carrying their weight? Cody has to carry it all? So that whole, the phraseology, the concept of one guy carrying the whole company, yes, that used to be true. That was a part of wrestling folklore back in the day when you had your territory, you know, system in place, and your world champion would travel around and then come back to the territory. Yes, I get where it comes from, but it's no longer applicable. Cody Rhodes, I think right now, for what WWE, this is most probably the smartest thing I've said all day. Maybe all week. Fuck, who knows? I don't know what the rest of the year's got coming, but maybe for the rest of the year. For what WWE needs right now, Cody Rhodes is the best champion they could possibly have. For what the company needs, from an optics point of view, from an audience composition point of view, from an advertiser's point of view. I know people hate it when I talk like a business guy because we just want to talk about finishes and wrestling and five-star matches. Well, not here at least, but you know what I'm talking about. But I think from a, again, putting on my producer hat, not just my fanboy hat, because I have a fanboy hat now. I thought I lost it a long time ago, but Randy found it for me. I think Cody Rhodes, I don't think there could be a better world champion right now. His performance in the ring is out fucking standing. He represents the company in such a positive way outside of the ring, off of the television screen. I just don't think you could find a better world champion right now.
I love the match too. I thought Logan more than held his own, you know, when he was in the figure four and he's screaming, Cody, you're going to break my leg. It was fantastic. He has a lot of the little subtleties that usually it takes someone years to put together in a match. And I'm sure that a lot of these matches are, you know, rehearsed and they spend a lot of time on it. And I know that a lot of people have been critical of that. I saw an interview maybe 6 weeks back with Ronda Rousey, where she talks about how he gets to rehearse all these matches and she never got to do that. And they really rolled the red carpet out for him. And I have seen some people who take that as a knock. I don't know when practicing and trying to, you know, get better at your craft became a bad thing, but I have seen some of that criticism about Logan, and I just think it's silly. I think he's more than held his own. I think he's real
bad at WWE. Yeah, that's an absurd conversation I wouldn't take part in, to be honest. It's just, that's absurd. You know, the little things, and it's funny because, you know, we did an episode, 83 weeks, just dropped yesterday, about Steve Regal. And in my conversations with Steve, you know, one of the things that he's talked about is the little details and how important those little details are. And how even some of the top talent now, including Cody, by the way, are going to guys like Steve and looking for some advice, not on laying out the match, not on how to do the big moves, not necessarily on anything, but the little details. And that's where the focus is. And I think that's fucking cool. Whether it's Logan, whether it's Cody, whether it's anybody. Yeah, practice, work it out. Pay attention to the little details. It's not the big, gigantic bumps and the suicidal stuff that really matters. It's the little details that make the matches that people will remember.
I don't think we're going to forget this match in that moment with that 360 cam anytime soon. We got a great question here from Chris, who wants to know, I love hearing about Eric's Saudi experience. Of course, he's referencing your 2019 stint with WWE. Any chance we could get a full 83 weeks episode about that? Would that be possible to talk about?
No, I think we just covered it. I don't really have much more to say. You know, I never went over there, so I didn't get to experience that. And I'm disappointed in that. I would have liked to have been part of one, just for the experience of it all. But yeah, I pretty much covered it on this episode. I guess I could go into a little more detail, you know, but I don't think it wouldn't carry a full 2 hours. Trust me.
We've got Eric here for a few more minutes. So if you've got a question, let's keep those coming. We did a poll that said, how hard will it be for WWE to turn Randy into a hated heel? 46% said it would be easy. 45% said it would be hard because people respect him so much. And 10% said, I will never, ever boo this man. I like when we've got a split audience like that. I'm like you. I definitely prefer him as a heel. And I hope that's the direction we're heading, especially if they're warming him up for Cody. I don't want a baby face versus baby face against Cody just yet. I would rather see it be a heel. The other poll that we got is, how's Cody's reign going for you? 11% said better than I imagined. 39% said going great. 38% say it's fine. And 12% think he's lost something post-Mania. I don't know if it's necessarily that he's lost something or it's we haven't had the same story like we had with the Bloodline. You know, that Bloodline story really carried the company for a long time. And now we've just had sort of little pop-up thunderstorm stories. Oh, AJ's got a beef and oh, Logan's got a beef, but we don't really have this built-in multi-year story with the Bloodline. I saw someone in the chat earlier say it's more like a WrestleMania hangover. I think that's probably the right description, a WrestleMania hangover. What say you?
I think if I step back and kind of take a macro view of what's going on, look, it's pretty well accepted, I think, by people who've been in the industry for a long time that anytime you have a baby face that's chasing a heel, you're in a good spot. Anytime you have a baby face that's being chased, you're still in a good spot, but it's not quite the same. So I think that's one issue. You know, we were all on board the journey, whether we were on the journey with Cody because he was fulfilling the dream of his father, which is, if you're going to talk about the premise of a story, that's a hell of a premise in and of itself. Forget anything else. Forget the Bloodline. Forget how good the Bloodline was. Just look at Cody's story. He's following literally a dream. He's completing a story that his father was unable to complete. In and of itself, a phenomenal story. Now you add in the Bloodline, which was an equally phenomenal story, maybe not as relatable as a son trying to complete his father's dream. That's a relatable story. You don't even have to be a wrestling fan to figure that one out. But now you throw the bloodline and the complexity and the evolution and the layers of that story on top of it as an obstacle. Oh, if that's not enough, let's throw fucking Rock on top of it all. I mean, come on now. If you're honest and you're not being contrarian for the sake of being contrarian, how do you top that? You know, for a young baby face. Oh yeah, that's right. He left WWE and now he's come back. I mean, there were so many layers and thick layers, not just thin layers, thick layers of amazing story. Is this as good as that? No, because that's impossible. And even if it was possible, you would get tired of it. If you go to a concert, you know, Fleetwood Mac, I went to a few years ago with Lori. And yeah, you want to hear those songs that just get you rocking, but you don't want to hear 3 hours of it. You want your emotions to come up and come down, and you want to go on a ride. It's a roller coaster ride. You want to go on it. It's an emotional roller coaster. So right now, yeah, it may be that we're on a little bit of an emotional downhill slide right now. I don't mean to sound like it's going in the ditch. You may be getting a little bit of emotional relief right now. That's the best way to say it, in Cody's journey. But guess what? There will come a time, because you can't keep it up here all the time. As we get a little bit of an emotional relief for the time being, when it's time to kick it into gear again, and you've got that heel that's chasing that baby face, and now people really care about that baby face, it'll matter again. But to expect that you're going to have a WrestleMania level of emotional investment 52 weeks a year is just not reality. And you wouldn't even want it if it was real.
Let's do a few more questions, then we'll put a bow on this one. Thank you guys for joining us here at 83weeks.com. If you've got a question, now's your last call for alcohol. Oliver wants to say, hey, great to see that wins matter. Another PLE held away from the U.S. What's the right ratio of doing these abroad? We sort of saw the same question from Mr. Kaplesh, who says, hey, Eric, since the last two WWE PLEs were overseas and the next three also are overseas, the next one in our country will be SummerSlam. Do you think it will be better for business for WWE? I think that's kind of self-evident. What say you, Eric?
Well, here's an example of why I agree with you, Conrad. And somebody else pointed this out. This wasn't my original observation, but it's very, very true. And I think we're going to see more of it. In fact, I would bet everything I own right now that we will. No question. France, they started singing along. Got that soccer-style fan engagement. It's very unique to Europe. Guess what they did in Saudi? Same thing. Randy Orton comes out. Same thing. I think we're going to see more and more of that, particularly in the overseas markets. And then it will migrate here to the United States, because everything does. Whether it's fashion, whether it's music, whether it's food, whether it's art, it usually starts in Europe and works its way to the United States. How do I know that? I remember going to Germany when I was 17 years old, had never heard of disco or discotheque. It didn't exist, at least out of my world, in Minneapolis. Never heard of it. Never heard disco music. Never saw glitter ball. Now, granted, I wasn't going to nightclubs and shit. I was 17 years old. I was going to bars, snuck in. But I went over to Europe, and I was like, everywhere I went, there was a discotheque. And in Germany at the time, even at 17 years old, I could get into a club in a bar, because the legal drinking age is whatever the bar owner felt was appropriate for your behavior. I loved it. And I started, and that was the first time I'd ever been exposed to disco music and discotheques. About 5 years, whatever it was, 8 years later, boom, here they are. They're everywhere. So I think that the exposure that WWE is getting overseas, but more importantly, the exposure that the American audience, domestic audience, is getting to the European audience, and in this case, the Saudi audience, is going to it's going to be catchy. And I think we're going to see more consistently and hear more consistently that kind of fervor that you typically would see in a European, they call it football, but soccer match. I think it's a great thing. And I think it will create more demand. All of a sudden now, a WWE PLE here in the United States is special. Because so many of them happen always where nobody could get to them. Now, when they come back to the U.S., it feels a little more important, doesn't it?
It totally does. And by the way, they got paid major bank today. This was like a WrestleMania level payday, and it happened in the middle of the day. So kudos to WWE. They've got the money printer going. It is certainly an international brand. And I think if you're trying to deliver shareholder value, you're trying to grow the bottom line, you know, you've kind of reached your peak here in America. I mean, yes, there's still a little bit of growth opportunity, but exponential growth internationally. And if you could set up shop in France or set up shop in Saudi Arabia or Germany or wherever and get tens of millions of dollars, or set up here domestically and do well, but not nearly as well, it becomes a no-brainer business-wise. But the crowd has been the happy accident along the way. And we want to thank the crowd for showing up today here with us at 83weeks.com. We're not done for the weekend, though. We're going to be back tomorrow night, late night, after AEW Double or Nothing. Eric was passing out praise left and right for the WWE PLE. Will he do it again tomorrow for AEW? Tune in tomorrow to find out. You can be live and interact with Eric Bischoff. All you've got to do is hit the subscribe button, turn on the notifications bell. I want to thank everybody who hung out with us today, including Toast Van Boss, who hooked us up. We greatly appreciate you showing up and showing out for us. But we'll be back tomorrow night, right after AEW Double or Nothing. Join us live. Tell a friend. 83weeks.com is your home for all things Eric Bischoff. And we're going Double or Nothing tomorrow night, right here at 83weeks.com.